You're a wizard, Harry. Welcome to the Harry Potter Book Club for the Half-Blood Prince with...
Sarah Tompkins.
Majaya Shrestha.
And I'm Michael DeMorrow. This week we discuss Chapter 28, The Flight of the Prince. We talk about the history of magic in North America... And the battle for the Quidditch Cup continues.
Slug Club of Orange, please.
Slug Club of Orange.
Oh, sorry.
No, Mitch got it. I mean, you probably need to know it too.
I need to know.
Just pick one. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's fine. Which Gryffindor was not invited to the Slug Club and does not take it well?
I don't know why I looked at you.
Oh, your face.
I apologize.
Yeah, it's really. He's very salty.
Can I have objects for 400, please? Can I have 400 objects?
For the 400.
I'm not telling what they're for. $400 an hour, Bajaya. Not 400 people.
Minutes.
Okay.
All right, who's going?
Okay.
That's two. What spell does Harry use on Draco Malfoy that causes Draco to bleed profusely?
Ah!
Ooh, Sarah, I think?
Septum Sempra.
Yes.
I can, will use that
I can
on
kill
Michael.
People. I can kill rabbits.
You can. Are you?
And you can ask for death yourself.
And you're a werewolf.
Kill
so that's fine.
Me. Kill me.
Chapter 28, The Flight of the Prince. Harry can't believe what just happened. He just witnessed Dumbledore get all killed and stuff, and he's in shock.
Technically, he just fell off the castle, so come on.
He got hit with the killing curse. We all know how that
Maybe
goes.
Maybe he dodged it and jumped off the battlements.
No one loves him, so he's dead.
Couldn't you have, like, a bulletproof vest that would deflect the killing
no.
curse?
No. You can't. Only love. Or whatever. Your mother's love.
And Dumbledore's mother never loved him.
So Snape is like, come on, everybody, let's scoot. Everyone leaves the tower, and Harry realizes he's paralyzed, but not because of a spell. He's just in shock. But he realizes he can move now, which is not a good sign for old Dumbledore.
Why?
Because he's dead. So the Death Eaters are filing out of the tower, and Harry's like, oh, and he like comes to his senses, and he paralyzes the one in the back and like jumps over him and goes crashing down the stairs, and he gets to the bottom, and Snape and Malfoy are already across the room. They force their way through the fight. This is a very action-packed chapter, FYI.
Good to know.
And at this point, so Harry's like, oh, I gotta get him. But then he gets tackled by Fenrir, who's like about to tear his throat out. Harry can feel his
Again,
hot breath on him.
Go straight for the noms.
And then I think it's Harry paralyzes him. It doesn't really, it was a little confusing. But anyway, Fenrir gets paralyzed by a spell, a magical spell. And so Harry pushes him off of him, and like everyone's fighting around him, and he sees Amicus trying to hex Ginny, and Ginny's like dodging out of the way, and Amicus is like really enjoying it because he's a creep, and Harry's like, fuck you, dude, and like zaps him, and he goes down, and then Harry's, there's, everyone's just still fighting, like Everyone you can imagine is here. They're all fighting. So Harry goes charging through because he's got to catch Snape. And I think he trips maybe. There's blood everywhere. I think he slips and falls.
His blood?
Just everyone's blood. It's just a big pool of blood. Neville's on the ground. Yeah, I think like Harry like steps on somebody or something and falls over, and he's there with Neville, and Neville's like, I'm okay. And there's this big blonde Death Eater who's just he's zapping everything, and his spells are ricocheting off of everything, and Tonks is fighting him, and he's causing like a lot.
That's why you kept asking about the big blonde Death Eater.
Yeah. So he's like causing all kinds of chaos, and so Harry shoots him in the face with a spell.
Right in the face. That's what I would do.
And he's like, ow. And he runs out the door.
Ow.
And so then Harry's like, I got to get him. And so he runs off after Snape, but his sneakers are literally slippery with blood.
Ugh.
And
delicious.
And he's running. He's like, oh no, they might already be at the room of requirement by now. But he sees a bloody footprint that's going towards the front door. And he's like, they must have cut off the room of requirements for somehow. So he keeps running and running and running. And he sees the brother and sister up ahead of him. So he takes a shortcut and he uses his excellent knowledge of Hogwarts to get in front of them. So he passes them. He gets to the front entryway, and the door is blasted open. The Gryffindor hourglass is also busted, and like rubies are just like falling everywhere. It's a big mess. Yikes.
Would you like just be trying to collect those rubies and be like, where can I sell these?
I mean, that's probably the way to go. But like, just poor Filch, right? Like, I mean, no one thinks about him.
Somebody's got to clean
like,
that mess up.
Oh, Dumbledore. Oh, everyone's so sad. He is such a mess so to clean sad. Up.
He just, Dumbledore is dead. He doesn't have to clean up a mess anymore. Right.
So Harry runs outside and he sees Snape and Malfoy, and they're like really far away, along with the huge blonde dude. She keeps saying how big and blonde he is.
Thor. Can we just call him Thor?
No.
It's He-Man.
Call him Hemsworth. What's his name? Oh, He-Man.
And so they're running towards like the.
Is it Yaxley?
I don't know. I don't remember. So they're running towards, because if they can just get out of Hogwarts, like cross the property line, they can apparate. So that's where they're headed. And but Harry sees that Hagrid has come out to try to stop them.
Oh, I hate this.
And Harry's like, no, not Hagrid too, not Hagrid. Because he assumes that he's going to die. And at this point, the brother and sister have caught up to Harry, and they blast him in the back, and he like hits the ground, and blood flies everywhere, because there's a lot of blood in this chapter.
Oh, it's
well, it is also an episode, though.
It's
so.
Okay. There's not any blood so far that I've seen here.
Blood everywhere! You don't know that. Have you seen my feed this episode at all? They're probably bleeding.
They're probably covered in blood.
It's a scene like, from The Shining where the blood just comes washing out.
So Harry gets knocked over, but he like gets super lucky and does a jinx that hits one of the brother and sister, then they like crash into the other one and they all fall over on top of each other.
It's like a Laura and Hardy thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, seriously, it's like Benny Hill.
Harry gets up and starts running again, and Hagrid's fighting the big blonde dude, and Harry just runs right by, and he tries to jinx Snape. This is like his one shot. Because the rest is sad. But he tried, and he misses.
Do not miss a chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime. No, he misses.
You hate to see it.
You really do.
And then, so Snape turns around, and Harry tries to crucio him, and Snape just parries it. And meanwhile, the big blonde dude lights Hagrid's hut on fire.
No! Fang is in there!
Fang is in there! And two injured Bowtruckles are in there, too. And they're literally kindling.
Well, leave the Bowtruckles in there. I just want Fang out.
So Harry tries to do another unforgivable curse. And Snape is like mocking him. And he's just like blocking the spells easily. Harry calls him a coward. And, you know, they say that that words hurt more than spells. And in this case, it's true. Because Snape really doesn't like being called a coward.
Oh.
Yeah. I guess the brother and sister have caught up because out of nowhere, Harry is suddenly being crucioed himself.
Oh.
And And he's like, he hears someone screaming. It's him. But
oof, that's a weird out-of-body experience.
Yeah. And Snape yells, "No, he belongs to the Dark Lord."
Of course he does.
So they stop. They stop doing the torture. And they all run for it again. And Harry hates Snape so much. He's you know, after him again. And he tries to do Sectum Sempra on him. And like, now Snape is pissed. They're so mad. Both of them are so mad.
Just so much blood and anger in this whole
chapter. And blonde dudes. And blood, anger, and blonde dudes.
Blood and anger and blonde dudes. I would watch this television show. I don't know about you guys.
And Snape yells, "No!" And he hits Harry with something special spell that we don't know what it is.
Is it in the Half-Blood Prince's book?
It's probably in there somewhere. Harry's wand goes flying, and Harry goes flying too. And Snape is like, "That's my spell, dog. I'm the damn Half-Blood Prince.
You stupid fuck."
And Harry's like, "What?" Actually, Harry doesn't even respond to it at all.
But he definitely is thinking.
Yeah. What? What he says, because he's so full of rage and contempt, is, kill me like you killed him, you coward.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is
Harry
very
doesn't even, he's not even, he doesn't even, Harry, like, he's not even scared. He's just so mad. But Snape is so mad too. And so he also blasts.
Wait, how mad is he, Michael?
He's so mad.
You might think he's mad.
But he's so mad. Like every paragraph, they're like, "I'm as mad as I can get," and then they're like, "No, now I'm more mad."
You think I was at a 10 before? I'm at a 14.
Well, if you're at 14, I'm at 20.
So Snape like just really, really wrecks Harry with another, again, non-lethal curse of some kind. But then Buckbeak swoops in and attacks Snape, and Snape's like, "Fuck this."
I think you mean Witherwings.
Yeah, come on. Get your shit together.
They refer to him as Buckbeak in the chapter. I'm sorry. So Snape's like, "I cannot even right now." And he runs off. And Harry's like, "I gotta get my wand so I can keep fighting him." But he can't find it. And he's like picking up the twigs. And it's like, "Nope, this isn't it. Nope. And then finally he gets it, and he turns around, and the Death Eaters are all gone. Hagrid comes out of his cabin, and he's holding Fang. And
is Fang okay?
Fang is okay. And Harry is just so... he's fine. Harry is... I mean, if you think about it, though, like right now in the Harry Potter world, Fang is definitely dead.
Because was a long time ago. Why would you say that? Michael!
Fang probably lived a beautiful, good life. Longer than most giant dogs of his size do.
Michael, I just lost a dog like 2 months ago. Wow, I can't believe you would come at me like this.
That was really insensitive. I'm sorry.
Michael, I don't like to be reminded of or think about my mortality or anybody's mortality, so how dare you?
Michael is canceled.
I made a mistake, okay?
In this cancel culture, you are definitely canceled.
I am canceled. But I'm gonna keep
Fang
going.
Fang is
anyway.
Still alive because magic.
Oh yeah, magic.
You
I forgot
terrible
about magic.
Person.
Hagrid actually made there was actually two Philosopher's Stones, and he
one,
or Sorcerer's
one
Stones.
For,
he kept the other
one.
One
for dogs and one for humans. There you
yes,
go.
Yes, exactly. So
Jesus
Fang
Christ.
Is fine. Hagrid is carrying Fang, and he's fine. And Harry's just so relieved that Hagrid's okay, because he just couldn't even take it. And Harry's like, "The spell is Aquamenti," and they, because his cabin is still on fire, so they start putting his house out, and then they extinguish all the flames. Hagrid is very sad about the bow truckles, but Hagrid's like, "Hey, no big deal. Dumbledore will fix this up, no problem."
Oh no!
And he's like,
"That's bad news for you, dude."
And Harry's like, "Oh fuck!" And then Hagrid is like, "Why was Snape with those Death Eaters?"
Oh no!
And Harry's like, "Snape killed Dumbledore," and Hagrid's like, "Don't be stupid."
What? Dumbledore loves Snape.
And Harry's like, "I saw it," and Hagrid's like, "No, Dumbledore probably just told him to Snape to go with the Death Eaters. You know, he's faking it or whatever." And Harry's like, "Whatever, you'll see, dude." And so they go back up to the castle, And there's a big crowd forming for some reason. And Harry knows that's where Dumbledore fell.
No,
and he's like completely.
I don't want it.
He's completely numb inside. They get closer. Hagrid's like, what are those people looking at? And they get closer and closer. Then we hear Hagrid's moan of pain and anguish.
I don't want it.
And.
Aww.
Yeah. And Harry walks up and Dumbledore is. He's like spread eagle and broken. And Harry's like, this is the greatest wizard I've ever known or ever will know. And
he's super dead.
He's very dead. And Harry straightens his glasses and wipes some blood from his mouth. And it hits him that, you know, Dumbledore will never be there for him again. He'll never be able to help him again.
Stop it.
And
I'm like tearing up right now, guys. I've read this book so many times and watched this movie, and it still makes me so sad.
Harry realizes he's like kneeling on something hard, and it's the locket that they got out of Voldemort's cave. And guess what? It's like Harry's like, I can't feel any worse, but this is not a Horcrux. This is the wrong locket. There's a note inside of it.
No.
And the note says, to the Dark Lord, I have stolen the real Horcrux and I intend to destroy it and a bunch of other stuff. R.A.B.
Oh, Regulus, that's his name.
God damn it, Rab.
And that is the end of the chapter.
That's a rough one.
The next couple of chapters are going to be so rough. I'm going to be so depressed. They're rough.
I mean, next book is going to be a whole lot of rough chapters, so it. Prepare thyself.
Prepare thyself.
New things. Snape is the titular half-blood prince.
Whoa.
Snape is the tit. It's Snape. And also, the real locket is not there. It's one that was taken by R.A.B.
That's not great. Where do we think it is?
It's a rabbit.
Hard to say.
R.A.B. is short for rabbit.
Oh, rabbit. That's true.
Questions. Why is Snape so upset with the word coward? Why does that, like, trigger him?
I think it's...
because he has very fragile ego.
Also because he... I think both sides of the groups that he is with calls him a coward for, like, either betraying them or betraying them. And I think it also stems from his relationship with Lily where... He betrayed her in calling her a mudblood and all that stuff. So
it hits him. He does not like it.
I think it's because of how he feels about himself. I think he maybe thinks himself. He wants to think himself as a hero because he is helping the Order and not the Death Eaters. But I think it's just like something in himself that he's like. Maybe I am a coward and not really a hero.
And I mean, he just did something theoretically very hard for him. And he's getting the opposite of credit for it, right? Like he's getting vilified for a thing that, you know, is bad.
I mean, it would be great if he could just like, you know, follow the Draco Malfoy method and compartmentalize that and not really get that angry about just the word coward. But... I think it really has to do with one, his fragile self-esteem, which is not great and has never been great. And he's bullied, so that is logical. But then also his position with either side kind of is less.
Do you think he also has problems with maybe choosing the easier way out? Not the easier way out, I guess, but choosing to be with the Death Eaters when he was at Hogwarts and choosing that path instead of... because, I mean, he didn't choose to save Lily until he found out that it was Lily. Do you think... I don't think he actually regrets that, but do you think maybe he has come to regret that? Probably not.
I don't know.
I don't know.
How?
I do not know.
Who knows?
I really don't. I mean, it could really go either way.
I could see him like not wanting to be called a coward by Harry for trying to save his parents and doing all these things to save him. Mm. But was he really?
Well, also he hates Harry.
He hates Harry so much.
He does really hate him.
So being called a coward by somebody you hate so much. I mean, and also he's like, I bet he partly blames. I mean, I know he partly blames Harry for the death of 1,000%. His mother, and so, like, you know.
He also, I think he actually is trying to teach Harry during this thing, because he's like, you know, until you do nonverbal spells, this is never going to work.
Practice it.
But, also, yeah. So that's the chapter.
I just don't understand why. I understand why he's so angry, but I also don't understand why he's so angry. But I, the other question I had about this, the battle scene where the Carrows are running away and attacking Harry, what, like, instead of, I'm sure they were given instructions to not use a killing curse, but in the heat of the moment, what would have happened if, like, Amicus or Electo had, like, just, instead of Crucio, hit Harry with the killing curse?
They probably would have been killed by
Voldemort. Well, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been.
But
it would have been bad for everyone but Voldemort.
Yeah, that would have been a hard tack for the plot of the actual books.
Yeah.
He definitely was narrowly missed by a killing curse from Big Blonde Dude when Big Blonde Dude was fighting against Tonks. Because, sure, like, he was just.
I'm pretty sure that's Yaxley, because I think he comes up in the next book.
I'm going to Google
it. He looks like
a Big Blonde Dude.
Harry Potter.
No, just Google Big Blonde Dude safe search off.
Death Eater. Thorfinn Rowley.
I have never heard
of
that name.
So when I said Thor, I was close?
I think,
When I said Thor, I was close.
Thor
took
a detour. I've never heard of that name before. That is crazy. I don't have any more question other than that, what I just asked.
I wanna, because Yaxley did come up as well.
Yaxley comes up in the next book. I've never heard of that name.
Thor, it's Thorfinn.
He doesn't do a notable enough job, apparently.
I guess not.
Alright. Y'all want to go to the segment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Y'all want to talk about something?
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Michael, for your fabulous, bloody recap.
It's very bloody.
Angry. Incredibly.
So angry. Not as angry as you're going to be in my segment. Hi, y'all. It's the 1920s in the Wizarding America.
Hi, turn into the Wizard Radio Station.
It's Celestina Warbeck, all the way from the Great Britain. Streaming from...
We were able to drink booze here, so we were much happier than
that. Well, wait till you hear about the wizarding community about booze. You'll be surprised.
Okay.
Right, so we're gonna... This is the last magic, history of magic in North America. A segment that we're gonna do unless Pottermore puts out any more. We're waiting. So this is the 1920s Wizarding America. I'm doing the 1920s fingers for listeners they can't see.
That's the 1920s fingers, see?
The 1920s were my favorite.
I'm doing the Charleston, and I'm wearing my flapper dress and doing my fingers.
I'm reading The Great Gatsby like everyone else was.
And the green light's over there. I can say it. This is the American dream. That is a callback from the last episode, if you don't remember.
No, two episodes ago.
Yep. So, the wizards in America, remember when I talked about the Great War and I meant the Second Wizarding War? Well, between 1914 and 1918, the wizards of America actually played their part in the Great War.
Really?
Even though people were, they didn't know about their contribution. There were magical factions on both sides, on all sides. So their efforts in fighting each other were not decisive, but the Wizards of America won many victories in preventing additional loss of life. They defeated their magical enemies, not many, but some. This common endeavor led to no softening of Makusa's stance on Nomad wizard fraternizing, because I don't know if you remember, because Makusa is very strict on, like, segregation between Nomad and wizarding community.
Yeah.
And Rappaport's law that we covered, I think, a few episodes ago, remained firmly in place. So by the 1920s, the U.S. wizarding community had become used to existing under a greater degree of secrecy than their European counterparts. And they did not have that much, like, selection for their significant others.
Yes. Partners?
Yep. Because they're like, do I pick Jack or Bill? Because I can't pick Henry because he's no match. The memory of Dorcas 12 trees. Do you remember that? From the Rappaport's law? You probably don't.
12 trees? No.
She was the one that fell in love with a nomad who ended up becoming a scour. So he was one of the group that trying to figure out who were wizards and stuff. And that ended up becoming the reason Rappaport's law became.
Gotcha.
Came to place. So that was such a catastrophic breach to the statute of secrecy that a Dorcas became a slang for an idiot.
A Dorcas.
Or an inept person, which we apparently still use. Crazy. Makusa continued to impose severe penalties on those that flouted the international statute of secrecy. They were, like, more strict than the people in, like, the European countries. Makusa was also more intolerant of magical phenomena like ghosts and poltergeists and fantastic creatures than the European people, because they were like, if these get out, we could get found. Like, come on, chill out for 2 seconds. Hold on. I really like this paragraph. After the Great Sasquatch Rebellion of 1892.
Awesome.
For full details.
Was that?
For full details, 1892. For full details, see Ortiz O'Flattery's highly acclaimed book, Bigfoot's Last Stand.
No, first of all, it's amazing. I didn't say when. I said where. Was that like the Pacific Northwest or something?
Because of the rebellion, the headquarters relocated from, for the fifth time in its history, from Washington, the state, to New York, where it has remained since then. The president of Makusa throughout the decade was Madame Serafina Picchieri. She's very gifted a witch from Savannah. Ilvermorny, by the 1920s, Ilvermorny was a very flourishing school for 2 centuries now.
Mm.
Because of that, all witches and wizards were proficient in the use of a wand.
Mm.
At the end of the 19th century, legislation was introduced, which meant every member of the magical community in America had to have a wand permit, which, unlike Britain. So in Britain, Ollivanders was like the unbeatable, like the basically only person that they would go to for a wand, but in America there were 4.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's because we believe in capitalism or something.
Shakoba Wolf was of Choctaw descent, and she was primarily famous for intricately carved wands containing Thunderbird tail feathers, which Thunderbird is a magical American bird closely related to a phoenix. Mm-hmm. Wolf wands were generally held to be extremely powerful, even though they were difficult to master. They were particularly prized by transfigurers, because there are a lot of transfigurers in North America.
Hmm.
I'm guessing this is pronounced Johannes Jonker or Jonker or Johannes Jonker. Who knows? He was a muggle-born wizard whose nomad father was an accomplished cabinet maker. And he himself Johannes turned himself into a accomplished wand maker. His wands were highly sought after and instantly recognizable, as they were usually inlaid with mother of pearl. That would be pretty. So pretty. After experimenting.
It's like a lot of American style guitars. A lot of American style guitars have mother of pearl.
After experimenting with a lot of course, his preferred was a pair of a Wampus cat. I don't know what that is.
Isn't Wampus one of the houses?
I think so.
Was it a cat?
Another morning?
Yeah, sure.
I think it is a Wampus cat.
Yeah, that was like a mountain lion-y thing, sure. Right? Maybe I'm
Thiago
wrong.
Quintana caused ripples through the magical world because he made his sleek and usually lengthy wands, and they entered the market. Hmm. I didn't mean to make it sexy, but I think it was.
But here we are.
Each encasing a single translucent spine from the back of a white river monster of Arkansas, and producing spells of force and elegance. Fears of overfishing, happened, and then it was kind of proven that it was only him that knew how the secret of luring them, and a secret that he death at which point once containing White River Monster ceased production. Makes sense.
Huh.
Violetta Bouvais was a famous wand maker of New Orleans. Refused for many years to divulge the secret core of her wands, which were always made of swamp mayhaw wood. Eventually, it was discovered that they contained the hair of the Rogueru, the dangerous dog-headed monster that prowl Louisiana swamps.
That's pretty cool.
It was often said that Bouvard wands that they took to dark magic like vampires to blood, but a lot of American wizarding heroes and heroines probably of the 1920s went into battle armed only with her wand, and even President Pequerie herself was known to possess one. So unlike the nomad community of the 1920s, Macusa allowed witches and wizards to drink alcohol, yo!
Nice.
Many critics of this policy were like, hey, y'all are getting drunk in towns everywhere in the United States where the cities and towns are full of sober nomadges. But in one of her rare lighthearted moments, President Pequerie was like, she called it the giggle water.
Oh, God.
It is non-negotiable. And that is the wizarding history of North America in the 1920s. They fucking love to party and drink.
Damn.
I was going to say, goddamn yes. Do you think they're responsible for a lot of the speakeasies? Probably.
I would love to think so.
Maybe that's why they were so hard. Maybe that's why they were so hard to find. Maybe they were like Grimald Place, where you had to know it was there to find it.
Maybe.
I like it.
Guys.
I like your theory.
It's a good theory. It's a great theory. Good job.
And that is it.
Apparently,
for this chapter.
Apparently, a Rogueru is like kind of a werewolf.
Huh. I would like to pet it.
Does it have
it,
long
please?
Enough hair? I feel like it needs a long hair. Does it have like head hair that's longer or something?
It is often described as a creature with a human body and the head of a wolf or dog, similar to the werewolf legend.
I just feel like, you know, that
it was, and if they used it, to tell like Cajun children to behave. They were like, if you don't behave, this monster will eat you.
That's solid. That works. That's good.
And then also another variation down in the South too, in New Orleans, said that like, if you didn't obey the laws of Lent, the rules of Lent, and like ate meat and stuff on the wrong days, it would kill you. It would kill Catholics who didn't do it. Yeah.
Damn.
That is something.
So guys, you better obey Lent.
Damn.
Anyway.
All right.
That's super cool. Thanks,
Bajaya. You're welcome.
Fascinating.
Also, to confirm, a wampus is a sort of panther-y like mythical creature from
American folklore. I just looked it up. Yeah,
American
it is
folklore.
Definitely a Over Morning House. I just remember, I don't even remember mine. It starts with an H? Hold on.
I'm a thunderbird.
You don't have to be so sad about it.
No, I'm pumped.
You shouldn't be pumped
that's
about
my
it.
Pumped, that's my pumped voice.
You shouldn't be pumped about it either.
Well, I am.
Oh no, I'm a puckwudgie. I'm a puckwudgie. I forgot.
I believe I'm also a Puckle.
That makes sense.
How does that make sense?
Does it?
Losers.
Wow.
Yeah, oh yeah, the element is the heart. That makes sense.
Wampus cat.
We're just so full of heart.
It doesn't make sense because neither of you have hearts.
That is rude. Take that back.
Nope. We are back for one more week of thank yous.
Yeah. Meow, 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 meow.
And I get to do them, so yay! And look at this, look at this beautiful list right here.
This is a really good list. I mean, we've had good lists every, yeah. But this is a really good closeout list for sure.
I've hugged most of these people.
I have been saved by two of these people.
That's true. That's not even a joke.
First up, we have Susie Checky.
Susie is great at giving first. Piggyback rides.
First person who saved me. Well, is second technically in the story, but the first person on this list.
She's strong
amazing
as
piggyback
heck.
Rides. Strongest person I know.
The next person is as strong as a tree. His name is Joe Rundle.
He has saved a lot of my plants. So, I mean, that has fed me.
He didn't save my life.
My plants have fed me a little bit, so thank you
for
saving my
life. I did ask him if there were plants that were easier to take care of than aloe, because I killed aloe, and he went, oh, no.
He went, well.
No.
Some things can't be helped.
That's true.
Next on the list, we have Donnie G.
Donnie G.
I think Donnie has been to every single GeeklyCon, or like he might have missed one.
I think maybe he started with Louisville. Is that the second one?
That could be it.
Okay.
I feel like the first big official one.
It was because he walked in, or Josh walked in, and Donnie was like, Josh? And they hadn't seen each other in a while because they went to like college together. It was really funny.
Donnie also played a really fun game with us.
Yeah. Thanks,
that he
Donnie.
Made this season. So he gave us a lot of support, and he made us sweat a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, a little bit, a lot.
Next up, we have Kevin, friend of the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
Always a big supporter. Thanks, Kevin.
And then after that, we've got Jesse. Hello, Jesse.
Hey, Jesse, and thank you.
How are things in Oklahoma?
Where the wind goes sweeping through the plains, and we ride through our Surrey with the fringe on the top.
Then we've got Michael Rocchino. Oh, what a treasure. What a treasure.
Forever my Dean Thomas.
I don't know why I keep giving him Dean Thomas. I don't mean to do
it. It's a natural casting, really.
That's true. And he loves beans and his ice cream, so.
True, he does love beans and his ice cream.
Then next, the person who would probably fit in on this podcast really well is somebody constantly roasting me. It's Matthew McCarthy.
He knows so much about Harry Potter. It's ridiculous.
He knows so much.
So much.
In terms of roast, I will say I've never met a Canadian who was more comfortable with roasting people.
He's very comfortable
with
roasting people.
It's because he's an attorney.
That's
and
what
an actor.
And an actor.
It balances out that very inherently Canadian kindness. But he does apologize. He is a very kind person. So
voice of an
it's
angel.
Not completely gone. Voice of an angel. He beat karaoke beater. Karaoke extraordinaire. Uh-huh.
Karaoke beater over a karaoke bleeder.
Oh, shoot.
And then next up, we have Jeff Tien, who is
actual foot savior.
Just an angel. Saved Sarah's life. Saved my life in L.A. by bringing me to literally the best Korean place, I think, in the history of the universe. It was so good. Oh, my God.
I have to go to L.A.
So next GeekyCon, Bajai is going to save your life.
Yeah, he's got to save your life.
It's all in the air.
That's true.
Yep.
And we've got Christopher Winter, master photographer.
Christopher.
Kara. Thank you, Kara. Also, amazing guest on the show.
And then just another angel, Paul Kim.
The Seamus to Michael's Dean. I would say.
Yes. owner of the coolest car.
I love that, like, we...
I heard.
I love that, like, one of the best parts of this show is the people we get to meet and, like, become actual friends with, and he's a buddy. And
thank you, Paul.
Feel very blessed that we got to meet such a good lad.
Hashtag blessed.
He is a hashtag blessed. What a good lad he is, that Paul Kim.
And let's not forget Jen Nelson.
I will tell you, she probably doesn't listen to this podcast. She's my friend that I met through walking her dog. She's an attorney also, but she moved to Louisville and she was like looking for someone to walk her dog. And I was like, I saw Harry Potter shit and Lord of the Rings shit and D&D stuff. Whoa. In her apartment when I went to meet her dog. And I was like, do you want to, if you're new in town, if you want to go get beer sometime, I will totally do it. And here we are like a year later and we're still friends.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Jen. That's super cool.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you, everybody.
A Harry Potter fan in the wild.
Yeah, and you make friends through dogs. I don't know.
Make friends through podcasts.
There you go.
If this whole list of thank yous these past few weeks have proven anything, make friends through podcasts, because there are some super amazing cool people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Not including the...
But not Michael.
I was going to say the two Yahoos on this podcast.
I'm just kidding, Michael. We love you. Season. We love you. One more season.
One last time.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Joining us for You're a Wizard, Harry.
Our editor is Mitch Cahill.
Our artwork was done by Jesse Carlton, and our music was done by Sean Fagan. I know you want to help us out, so why don't you head on over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review? And also, send us an email so we can talk to you. You can do that by emailing us at potterpod@geeklyinc.com. Hey, I know you all want to keep talking to us, so find us on Twitter @PotterPod.
I'm Michael, and you can find me at 13Nerd.
I'm Sarah, and you can find me at Her Lady Tompkins.
And I'm Vijaya, and you can find me at I Think Ninja.